The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, gentle listener. Michael Kist here with a quick note about today's show. What you're going to be hearing today is part one, or the first half of BGN Radio 126 with Jimmy Kemsky and Brandon Lee Gouton, covering two teams from Jimmy's excellent Dumpster Fire series. Those two teams are the New York Football Giants and the Washington Football Team. In part two, which will be released soon, you'll get the second half of the show, which focuses on the Dallas Cowboys. The reason for the split is due to some technical issues on my end. It's too boring to explain, and I apologize for the abrupt ending to this show and the cold open to the next one. Thank you for bearing with me on this, and we appreciate the support as always. So with that qualified, BGN Radio coming up, episode 126, part one. Let's go.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gouton and Jimmy Kemsky.
What's going on, everybody? It's BGN Radio episode number 126. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Gouton of BleedingGreenNation.com. I am Jimmy Kemsky from PhillyVoice.com. Brandon, what's going on, buddy?
Jimmy, I want to start us off with a song. Special guest appearance here by the one, the only, Alan Williams.
Okay.
It's the most wonderful time of the year with Jimmy's Dumpster Fire series featuring vitriolic trolling. You'll be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Oh, wait, is the second verse? It's the roastiest division of them all. With those Dave Gettleman gaffes and those Dallas delusions, Washington has a racist team name. It's the roastiest division of them all.
Very well done, buddy.
Thank you. Well, it wasn't me. It was Alan Williams. But yeah, thank you. I will relay the message. And of course, Jimmy, as you know, BGN Radio is presented to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. Now, you can eat the same meat snacks that the Eagles do. Go to RighteousFelon.com and use discount code BGN15, that's BGN15, at checkout for 15% off orders of $50 or more.
I had Fal Capone, by the way. Delicious.
Nice. There you go. Get it. You can get it with BGN15 at RighteousFelon.com. Jimmy, we can't even delay any further. This is a huge week.
Yes.
It is the Dumpster Fire series week, which everyone loves, obviously. It's a huge thing. You've been doing this for, what, like 50 years now, right?
It's been a while, yeah. I started doing them. I think I started it when I was with Philly.com. So I guess it would have been like 2013 I started doing these. Or maybe it was before. I don't remember exactly. But I've been doing them long enough. And they suck to do. Like, they are not fun to write. They really aren't, because, like, they got to be bulletproof. Like, you can't just kind of throw some stuff out there, and because it's going to get picked apart by, mm-hmm. like, the fans of the other teams. The Eagles one is easy to do. I should say that, because I've already written, you know, I've written everything I possibly can about this team with nothing going on, especially. So, like, that's easy. Like, it's easy to find the Eagles' 10 biggest problems, you know, issues, reasons for concern, whatever, heading into the season. That's nothing. But the three other teams, you know, I don't follow them as I know them well enough, but I don't follow them, obviously, as closely as I do the Eagles. So they're really hard to do, because if you, like, have some kind of fact wrong, or if you just have, like, even one dumb point, then like the fans of those teams will just jump all over you. So I really go out of my way to make sure that those are like airtight. And as a result, they suck. Like, it sucks to do them. I love the reaction afterward, but it is a series that I don't really look forward to doing. But like while they're getting published, they're a lot of fun. And then after they're over, I'm relieved that I don't have to worry about them for another year.
Everyone loves them too. The reaction is universally. Well, I mean, not universally, because obviously the fans get upset of their own team, yes. but all the other fans, certainly of not that team, usually love them a lot. So why don't we just dive right in, Jimmy, with the first team, Washington.
Yeah, I did Washington third, and I always lead off with the Cowboys, but we'll start off here with Washington. I think it's more fun to write these when the other teams are actually good. So it's more fun, you know, tearing down a team that like actually has some talent. But with like the Giants and Washington, it's just so easy to pick on them. So it's like kind of like less fun. Going through their roster, the thing that really stood out to me the most about this team is they just have like a ton of players that like, you're like, I don't even know who that guy is. You know, I put like the clip in from Major League where they're showing like people around town, like reading the paper and looking at like a preview of the team or whatever. And, you know, they're like Mitchell Freeman, Mitchell Freeman, you know, it's like Willie Hayes, Ricky Vaughn. I never heard of these guys. There's a lot of that going on with the roster. But I think for me, you know, obviously, I think you start with any team with the quarterback. What is your feeling on Dwayne Haskins?
Not a fan. I remember watching him last year when he first came in. I had an open mind. I didn't really have a strong opinion either way about him.
Sure.
From Ohio State. So I had a pretty open mind. And I was like, all right, I'll see what this guy's about. And I remember, you know, just watching him. And I think I said this during the season last year when we were previewing the second Washington game. He just reminded me of when I saw Mitchell Trubisky during his rookie year. And that he just looked like lost out there at times.
Okay.
Like he didn't look ready. He didn't know what he was doing. Now, of course, I said that before the Eagles game. And he did pretty well against
them. He had a good game against the Eagles, yeah.
But that was one game against, you know, a defense that just wasn't as good against the road.
Right.
And as like Ronald Darby coming off injury and starting. So I think some of it was the Eagles defense also just being like terrible in that game. I'm not really impressed. I thought, you know, for any good moments he had, I thought there was a lot more questions still to be answered there. And I'm not the biggest Dwayne Haskins believer.
Yeah, he held onto the ball for a long time, you know, per drop back. I forget what that number actually was.
It was like longest in the NFL.
It was heading into the Eagles game. By the time the season was over, I guess that like there was just that one game thereafter. I guess he got it out quickly or a little more quickly in that last game because he wasn't the worst in the NFL anymore. But his sack percentage last year was 12.5%. So on 12.5% of his dropbacks, he got sacked. And that was the second worst over the last decade. It was actually the second worst over the last, I think it was 14 years, but I didn't want to put 14 years because that just looked, you know, like in that 15th year, there's somebody that was worse, you know? So I just did like the last decade. And the only guy that had a worse sack percentage, ironically, was RG3. Mm-hmm. And that was the year after he came back from that injury and they rushed him back too quickly. And he wound up taking some punishment that year. So the last two quarterbacks with a sack percentage that high were both from the team from Landover, Maryland.
And Jimmy, I just mentioned Ronald Darby. Ronald Darby is starting for Washington at quarterback.
Yeah, so I got some. That was the one thing that I got heat on from all from any of the three teams that I covered. That was the one pushback that I got, was that, you know, they signed Kyle Fuller this offseason. So I had Darby and Fabian Moreau as their starting corners. Fuller is it's unclear like what kind of role he's going to play. It's possible
like
he starts on
guy.
The yeah, it's possible that he starts on the outside because he's better than Darby or Moreau. You know, when he was in Washington before, he played in the slot. In Kansas City, he played both outside in the slot, and he finished his time there at safety. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's necessarily a certainty that he's going to be a starter on the outside. In fact, anywhere I looked, like any depth chart that you look at, they had Darby and Moreau as the two outside starting corners. So, yeah, I mean, those corners are, they're not good. I mean, they're worse for sure than what the Eagles have at corner, and probably what they had last year too, if that's even possible. But Darby, really bad year last year. Like, and to the, and not like he was always kind of like iffy in terms of his availability and his durability, but he's just so bad last year. I think the biggest problem with him was his tackling. And then there's some pretty funny clips of Fabian Moreau just getting destroyed on routes. I included one of them in the article. But he had a pretty bad year initially. He kind of got a little better as the season went along. But yeah, their secondary was bad last year, and it's going to be bad again this year.
And really, I mean, when you look at this team's projection, there are like a lot of, you know, whatever kind of projections have them contending for the number one overall pick, really, this year. Like,
yeah,
that speaks to the point of just the lack of talent on this roster.
The one thing that they do have that has potential to be great is their defensive front.
Yeah, but that's not what this series is about, Jimmy.
That's not, I know, but I think we should just mention that. Sure. When I publish these things, they're all about, you know, negative, don't mention any of the positives or whatever. But here, I will note quickly,
right,
five former first round picks. So Chase Young this year, I think he's going to be awesome right out of the gate. You know, you have Ryan Kerrigan, who's been kind of like borderline Hall of Famer.
I was going to say borderline Hall of Famer, yeah.
And then you have Jonathan Allen, who looks good. You have Daron Payne, who they took a couple years ago in the first round. Montez Sweat quietly had a pretty decent rookie year last year. And then they have like these other guys like Matt Ioannidis. You look at his production.
Yeah.
I think he's got like 15, 16 sacks over the last 2 years. As an interior defensive lineman, they have Tim Settle, big guy from Virginia Tech. Ryan Anderson got some playing time last year. He's the guy that like said if he like knows what his name is at the end of his career, he, like what was the actual quote from that guy? Did you see that?
He'll have played the NFL wrong if he can remember his grandkids' names.
That's it. Okay, like really?
Great.
But he's got some talent too. So I mean, they are loaded on that defensive front. Aside from that. And aside from Terry McLaurin, I mean, they just got nothing. They have nothing on offense. Like the another thing I pointed out early in that piece was their offensive line. I mean, last year they had Trent Williams hold out for the entire season. Bruce Allen and Trent Williams got into this gigantic pissing match, and that neither of them won. And then this offseason they finally trade him. I'm actually surprised they got as much as they did for him. They got a third round pick, and I think the third round pick was in the next draft. The fifth round pick in this past draft, or could be reversed, but they got a 3 and a 5. So they have like a couple of two or three young guys that'll be fighting for that spot. Sadiq Charles, they drafted in the 2020 draft. Cornelius Lucas is free agent pickup. And then a guy they took in the third round a few years ago, who's been a disappointment for them. And I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's either Jerron Christian. Left tackle is going to be a problem for them more than likely. They signed Wes Schweitzer, another Mitchell Friedman on their roster from Atlanta. He's their left guard. And then they sort of have like a replacement level guy in Chase Roullier playing center. I might be selling Chase Roullier a little bit short. He's an average starter, I'd say. But the left side of their line really has the makings of some potential trouble. By the way, Derek Barnett, if he doesn't produce against these teams, Nate Solder for the Giants, then I think there's real room for concern with him.
Yeah, so I mean, you just look at this roster. Like I said again, there's just not a whole lot to be excited by. You specifically mentioned that Jeremy Sprinkle again. Yeah. Who is that? Is there like starting tight end?
Yes.
Richard Rodgers is one of their top tight ends, I guess.
He's probably their number two tight end, yeah.
I do like Ron Rivera, if I have to say something positive about this Washington team. Although I was reading Hogs Haven, the Washington version of Bleeding Green Nation. They do a good series. The guy over there named Bill in Bangkok is his username. Does a really good like in-depth breakdown of like different positions in the NFC East and kind of like ranking them and stuff. And one he had for a head coach, though, there was like a poll in the article. It was like, who's the best head coach in the NFC East? And like, it was Rivera, like, by significantly, like over Doug Peterson. And then people brought that up in the comments. It's like, are you serious? And they're like, right. Well, no, actually, if you look at the records, it's not all that different. And it's like, give me a break.
Yeah, that's a little ridiculous.
And they're not going to have an offseason, though. That's the thing. Even if, like, you do like Rivera. And I do think Rivera.
But hold on. If that's the argument, Mike McCarthy surely has a way better record than him, right?
Yeah.
Right? He has to, right?
So that's silly. That's clear homerism to me. Come on, what are we doing? Like, Doug Peterson won the Super Bowl. He's done a lot more with less. Anyway, I don't want to get too bogged down on that. I just wanted to say
he's a boring coach, which I think is fine. Like,
yeah, like, he brings legitimacy to like this totally like totally joke of an organization. It's like, oh, Ron Rivera, like that's a guy who like kind of knows what he's doing. He's not like a total doofus.
He's a former player, which I think players respect. I think, you know, his track record in the NFL, players do respect and like him. Players talked about him very glowingly after he left
Comes
Carolina.
From a good coaching tree.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Comes from the Andy Reid coaching tree, of course. But they could have easily gone out and hired some kind of
Urban
know, like
Meyer.
Steve Spurrier kind of, you know what I mean? Yeah. So like they kind of went the boring route, which I think for that team was the right way to go.
What else about Washington, Jimmy?
Darius Geis is their guy that is just going to frustrate them every year, I think, because he's got three significant injuries, lower body injuries in his career already. Like you can clearly see that he has talent. He's going to be that guy. It's just really frustrating because he just can't stay healthy.
Jimmy, two more things I want to say about Washington are your number one point, which I don't think we stopped down on enough, like made clear enough that like, who cares about this team, really? Like you said, who cares about this team? I mean, even like within the DMV, I feel like, I mean, obviously there are Washington fans there, but I don't really have experience of that area too. I know like good friend Patrick Wall kind of grew up around Virginia. So like he would always kind of hate Washington more than the other NFC's teams because, you know, he would have to deal with those Washington fans. And John Stolness also is kind of like a Washington area guy. I guess those kind of guys, when you're around it, like you dislike him more. But to me, like, I don't even know if I can tell you of any Washington fans that I know, like in my real life. And if they are, like, I can think of maybe a couple older guys, but like no one young at all.
You know, their fans are more realistic too about their team. Like they know their team is garbage. And they know that, like, their organization is garbage.
Well, what's that go back to?
They know their owner is garbage. So, yes. Like, they have a lot of, you know, like, team awareness about what they are. Whereas, mm-hmm. like, the Giants, for example, their fans do not have that same awareness. Mm-hmm. They're under, like, this delusion that that's some great organization. They've been better than three teams in the last 6 years record wise. But you're right, like, I think your general point there, you know, who cares about this team, is it's like, who cares? They're not only bad, they're also boring.
Their stadium gets taken over by Eagles fans every year.
It's the worst stadium in the NFL by far that I've been to.
It's just a total joke. The owner is a joke. The fact that they're still not changing their name is just like obviously just such a joke.
right
Jimmy, let's move on from this garbage team. Why don't we go to break here? Do you have a message for me? Do you have anything to tell me before we get a break?
Well, yes. Kristen and Stephanie Roach of Roach Realtors, Brandon.
Yeah.
They boast over 50 years of combined experience in real estate sales. If you're looking for a new home, they're dedicated to listening intently and matching individuals and families with a home and neighborhood that best fits their needs. And they are expert negotiators who know the market trends and can get you the best price possible. If you're looking to sell your home, Kristen and Stephanie understand that buyers more than ever are doing the bulk of their searching for a new home online. So it's paramount that your listing pops off the screen and grabs buyers' attention. So they employ professional photographers, including drone photography for overhead shots, experts in interior and exterior design. They can help stage your home. And I even helped them actually write the descriptions of some of the properties. So if you like my writing, then hire them. If you don't like my writing, then hire somebody else, I guess. But check out their reviews. Again, Kristen and Stephanie Roach on Zillow.com. You'll find nary a review that is 4 stars or less. 5 stars across the board for a free consultation or market analysis of your home. Call or text Kristen at 856-906-9295. I'll repeat that, 856-906-9295. Or, hell, you can just email me, jimmy@phillyvoice.com. Brandon?
Back after this.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It was always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog," she's like knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Back here on BGN Radio, episode 126, with the NFC East Roast / Dumpster Fire series. We talked about Washington, Jimmy. Now let's start with a team that employs my favorite general manager in the NFL. In my opinion, this guy is my favorite general manager, Dave Gettleman of the New York Giants. I mean, don't you have to start with him when you talk about this team?
He actually is my favorite GM in the league because he's very entertaining.
I say that unironically, yes.
He really is. He's entertaining, and the things he says, is crazy. He's crazy. Age doesn't matter last year. Positional importance doesn't matter. Positional value doesn't matter. Yeah, it's a crock. That's what it was. It was a crock. Totally in over his head. And he's been in the league forever, too. It's so weird that guys can last in the league as long as he has. I can't believe they didn't fire him this offseason. What does he have to show for the 2 years that he was the GM? And they keep him for another year. It's unreal. They fired Pat Shurmur. You'd think that'd be an opportunity to just completely overhaul both the coaching staff and the front office. But they're like, "You know what? Pat Shurmur, you were bad. You got to go. Dave Gettleman, you were somehow better at your job than Pat Shurmur was." Pat Shurmur was bad, clearly. But was Dave Gettleman better at his job than Pat Shurmur was at his job? Is that what I'm to understand here?
I mean, look at their roster and what are you really pointing to that's this is on the rise, this is promising? Is that really what you're telling me with Daniel Jones? And even if it is, okay, that's one thing. Look at the rest of the roster.
Yeah. I mean, they have Saquon, but they had to take, they used him with a second overall pick.
That's an indictment. That's a joke. Yeah.
Yes.
That's laughable.
The record I mentioned before, there's only three teams with a worse record of the last 6 years than the Giants. Over that span, they're 35-61 for a winning percentage of .365. They actually had an 8-4 record over that span over Washington. So if you take those 12 games out, they're 27-57 for a .321 winning percentage. The only teams with worse records. Did you read? Can you guess them? Did you read this? Do you already know what the answer is?
I did. But the Browns,
one of them's obvious. Yeah, Browns. Uh-huh.
Now I'm seeing it here. The Jags are second, and then you have the Bucks first overall.
Yeah, and at least the Jaguars made it to an AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
You know, at least they have something to show for. Giants did make the playoffs once within that span.
Yeah, but that was such a fluky year. They had an easy schedule.
They got blown out, yeah.
That was the boat. It's all been downhill.
Yes, right. As soon as OBJ was on that boat, it really has gone all downhill for them. But they had, their point differential was really low. I think they were 11-5. They won a lot of one, two, or three points. It was pretty obvious that it was going to turn around. The next year, they weren't going to have that same kind of luck, and that's exactly what happened. But they've become, in recent years, I mean, obviously they have the two semi-recent Super Bowls, I guess, the last one being in 2011. Mm-hmm. But really, in the last, half decade plus, they're one of the worst teams in the NFL.
Every year when the Eagles play them, it's a free win. I know some of the games have been close and the Eagles have had to come back, but are you really scared of the Giants at all? To me, I really right. just assume it's always we're going through the schedule of this year predicting wins and losses. How can you possibly predict the Giants to beat the Eagles? You can't do it. Until you actually see it happen.
Right.
They're 20-4 now or something in the last 24 games. That's insane. Division games are tough. I don't care
You know, usually, like, that's an accomplishment for the Eagles to be able to do that. It's also an indictment of the Giants and how just miserable they've been. Because, like, you know, division things, weird things can happen. Those games can be closer than you expect. And there have been some meaningless, like, Week 17 games in there, too. But even despite all that, like, the Eagles have just dominated this team. And part of it has just been the Giants have been awful. Their defense, entirely shreddable, except for like that one year where it was good. And I mean, Eli Manning, obviously, it was a huge joke and overstayed his welcome. And the Giants were so dumb to hold on to him for as long as they did. I mean, it's just this entire joke of a team. They've been a joke of a team. I guess people feel like they have hope now because they have Daniel Jones. And I feel like Daniel Jones exceeded my expectations. I think he exceeded expectations as a whole.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
As a rookie. Uh-huh. I don't think he's a lost cause. I don't.
I think he's got some talent. I'm with you there.
He makes some, like, I know you, the Danny Dime is a nickname you hate, but, like, he legitimately makes some, like, legit, like, dime throws. Like, he makes some legitimately, like, wow throws. So I think he has talent. I'm definitely higher on him than I am Dwayne Haskins. I just think he showed more. But you kind of wrote here, Jimmy.
Yeah. The big flaw in his game is the turnovers. I mean, similar in some ways to Carson Wentz with the fumbling, but not similar in any way to Carson Wentz with the number of, you know, interceptions that he threw last year. So there was only one game that he played last year where he didn't have a turnover, and that was week 16 against Washington. Mm. On the season, he had 12 picks. He had 11 fumbles lost, and he only became the starter in week 3, and he missed two games late in the season. So he only started. The number of turnovers that he has is kind of crazy. And when you actually look at them, so I pulled video of every turnover that he had. Like, some of the fumbles are like, you know, blindside hits where, or like a blindside guy reaching out and like knocking the ball out of his hands as he's throwing. You don't really blame him for those, maybe, but there's a lot of careless ones where he shouldn't have, he just flat out shouldn't have fumbled. And then some of the interceptions are just bad. Like, we're not talking like in the article. I remember like a big thing that Giants fans used to do back in the day. They just blame every Eli interception on Reuben Randall. Like, Reuben Randall ran the wrong route. Reuben Randall didn't catch the ball and it shot up in the air and it got picked. It's all Reuben Randall's fault. Anytime there's any Eli blame to go around, they point to Reuben Randall. So there's no Reuben Randall scenario going on with his picks. Like, they're all like either bad throws, bad decisions, or a combination of the two. So he's got to get a lot better in terms of decision making and also just taking better care of the football. Because if he turns the ball over, like, as his career progresses the way that he is, he's basically just going to be Jay Cutler.
I think he snowballs. I really do. Like, I remember specifically watching that Week 7 game against the Cardinals last year, and I think he was, like, looking okay for a bit, but then, like, late in the game, he just, like, totally fell apart. Like, he was pressing. He's just trying to do too much, and maybe, you know, that's something you kind of work on. He was a rookie. I think that's also just, like, a bad hallmark in quarterbacks. Like, you see where, like, okay, you know, how do they respond to a mistake? And I think with Jones, like, he's clearly just kind of, he's snowballing. Like, you see these numbers, like, it's like, okay, he has two turnovers. Like, it comes, it just, like, it's like a bad start and then it just gets worse. I think that's a thing with him. And like you said, I mean, that the specifically the fumble that Jamal Adams just literally just runs up to him and like takes the ball out of his hands, like, some of the carelessness right, is really bad. And I remember going back last year, and I don't have it in front of me now, and I don't think I tracked it through the end of the year, but I was like looking back at his turnover / fumble numbers through college, and like, they're horrible. Like, even going back to Duke, like, so this has always been an issue. This isn't even just like a bad rookie season. Like, this was a big issue at Duke for him. So, like, I don't think it's just totally going away.
Yeah, 36 games at Duke. I don't know how many fumbles total he had, but I know that he lost 13 fumbles. Mm-hmm. And in college, that's not good.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, in the NFL, like, these guys are all, you know, they're a lot better in the NFL at ripping the ball away than they are in college. So you had 13 lost fumbles in 3 years at Duke. That is really a bad stat. So it's not just a fluky thing that happened in his rookie season in the NFL that goes back to his time in college.
He's still dealing with an offensive line that is not certainly, at the very least, is not among the league's best.
Right.
How would you assess their offensive line, Jimmy?
Yeah. So, I mean, their worst player last year on the O-line was Nate Solder, who also happens to be now before it was Eli, but now that he's gone, he is now their highest paid player, which is crazy. Like,
another Gettleman special.
The deal that they gave him, just, it never made any. So I understand, like, overpaying for a left tackle when you are what they were, because they had Eric Flowers as their left tackle. And, you know, there were times where, you know, the opposing right defensive end would just you know, completely wrecked the game because Eric Flowers couldn't block him. So I understand the idea of like maybe overpaying for an offensive tackle that offseason, but not him. Like he was going to turn 30 years old in like a month when they signed him. So when they signed him, he was like 29 years and 11 months old. And they gave him the highest offensive line deal in history at the time. It was 4 years, $62 million. And like they weren't good and they weren't going to be good for a long time. So the idea of giving a 30-year-old left tackle the money that he got when the team, by the time they were going to get good, it was highly likely that Soder was going to go into decline. It's just such a mind-blowingly dumb thing to do. And then they also traded sort of part of the OBJ deal. So they traded OBJ for a one and Peppers. And then separately, they traded Olivier Vernon for Kevin Zeitler, the right guard. Zeitler's getting up there in age too. So it's kind of the same thing. Like they traded, you know, their best pass rusher basically for a guy that was, he's not as old as Soder. But again, the same concept where by the time the Giants are going to be good, like that guy's going to probably be in decline. So he just wanted to fix the offensive line, but put no thought, amazingly, into the age of these players and how they're going to fit into the team's plan long term.
Bad, Jimmy. It's not a good situation.
Pro Football Focus had Soder down for 11 sacks last year. That's where like my research kind of began on him during, you know, while writing this. So I watched every Giant sack on the season, and I got through like the first five or six games. Almost all these are Soder so far. Like, did he get a lot better as the season went along? And I'm thinking, that can't be right, because I know that like Vinnie Curry got him for two last year, so I know those are coming down the line. And they just kept coming and coming. Like, I had him down for at least being at least partly culpable. Like, I wouldn't necessarily put the sack on him for all of these, but at least partly culpable for 19 of their sacks last year.
And 7 forced fumbles.
Yes. At least one of them was returned for a touchdown. It might have been 2. Hmm. But he kind of has an excuse. I didn't realize this until later, but I guess his kid was diagnosed with I believe it was Hodgkin's.
Jeez.
So he did spend a lot of time during the season in the hospital with his kid. So that probably played played a part in his bad season last year. But nevertheless, heading into this season, that is a troublesome spot, as is, you know, other parts of their offensive line, namely center. They have a guy named Spencer Pulley. He's a replacement level guy. They have Andrew Thomas, who they drafted with the 4th overall pick, which, fine, I understand you need to build up your offensive line. Mm-hmm. There wasn't, you know, an obvious player that they should have taken instead of him. But again, you're looking at a rookie playing at right tackle. You want to list some of the guys he's going to have to face next year?
Brandon Graham. Yeah, I have it right here. It's like Marcus Lawrence twice. Yeah. Chase Young / Ryan Kerrigan twice. Brandon Graham twice. Khalil Mack. Miles Garrett. TJ Watt. Eric Armstead. D Ford. Matt Judon. The Ravens. Isaiah Simmons. And then Jason Pierre-Paul.
Like, that's brutal. That's like, that's on a similar level as like what Lane Johnson had to face the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
Mm.
So he's in for... he's in for probably some welcome to the NFL moments. So yeah, again, like their pass rushes, or I'm sorry, not their pass. Well, their pass rush is going to be bad too. We'll get to that in a second. But their pass protection is really going to be in for you know, another rough season, I believe.
Yeah, and you just said it there. Their pass rush isn't good either. They're just not good in the trenches.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They're okay against the run. Like Doug. Yeah. Doug would tell us like off the record during the season that, you know, he felt like they had a really good run defense, and they better. Like they're all huge up front. Their three interior linemen are Dexter Lawrence, Dalvin Tomlinson, and Leonard Williams they picked up during the season last year. Mm-hmm. But those are all 300-plus pound guys, and Dexter Lawrence is like, you know, like 340, 350. Dalvin Tomlinson's way up there. So, I mean, they better be good at stopping the run, you know? So, but they aren't good at getting to the quarterback. They're two edge rushers that have shown the most so far. And they're both young guys in Lorenzo Carter and Ximenez. Old Dominion, was he from? They both had 4.5 sacks each last year. So maybe there's some optimism for those guys. You know, those are essentially their leading sackers returning this year. are Ximenez and Carter, both with 4.5. And then the three interior guys that I mentioned last year, they combined for 6 sacks last year. So not at all an intimidating – like, you look at Washington's front compared to this front. Like, Washington's, mm-hmm. I don't know, their 7th or 8th best pass rusher is probably the Giants' best pass rusher.
Yeah, it's not a good group. And, you know, the secondary is also like, they're still and the linebacker, like the defense as a whole is just not really anything. Like, who are you scared of on that defense?
I mean, nothing.
If you're trying to run the ball up the middle, maybe you're scared of that. Like, you don't love that because they had some good run stuffers, like you mentioned. But I mean, the secondary, exposable. I thought Blake Martinez is a classic, like Dave Gettleman signing in that. Oh, Blake Martinez, like, there's a recognizable name. He started for the Packers. He's compiled stats, but, like, he's slow. You have him down here for a 4.7, not good in coverage by all accounts. And, like, so he's not even, like, a modern NFL linebacker, you know? And that's clearly, you know, not Dave Gettleman's MO or forte, if you will, kind of being a modern football guy. And really, that comes down to, like, just to sum it up here about the Giants, like, that kind of comes down to it for me. Why would you take this team seriously when the guy in charge of this roster is just like a total joke, doesn't know what he's doing? And then
right.
I don't even know what to make of Joe Judge. I know, you know, we've gone over here before that you don't like him or you're skeptical. And I get it, but I kind of just don't know either way. If I had to say, like, if I have to take a side here and have a take, I would say I'm not optimistic because he's inexperienced, first year head coach without this offseason. And you just look at the Belichick coaching tree and it's not very good. It's very bad, actually. I think the indicators there aren't positive. I will allow for he's just such an unknown that there could be upside. I don't know. That's like kind of me throwing darts at the wall. I guess that's what you're kind of selling yourself on. If you're a Giants fan, you're like, well, maybe it could go right. I don't know, but that doesn't seem like the best case. So yeah, I think the Giants stink. They're in a total spot where, like, they don't deserve benefit of the doubt at all. They totally have to be a prove you wrong kind of team.
Yeah, admittedly, on the Judge point, I am judging Judge. Maybe nice. a little early there, because we haven't seen him. We haven't seen, like, bad game plans from him yet. We haven't seen dumb down and distance type decisions yet. Like, is he punting on 4th and 2 from the 38? You know what I mean? So we haven't seen anything like that yet. But just the notion that he just refused to mention any player's name for almost 4 months after he got hired. Like, could you imagine a coach doing that in Philly?
Wouldn't fly.
Like, it would just become sort of like almost a challenge to see who could get him to name a player first. But he would, like, if that happened in Philly, everyone would just make fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird how, like, the New York media kind of gets this reputation as, you know, being all hard. Not at all. Like,
it's not
kinda
a football town.
I kind of don't see that at all. Where he was able to just kind of get away with that without being totally criticized is maybe the wrong word, but, like, why? What is this? What is this? I guess they did ask that, and he did give an answer, but I feel like he would have gotten killed for that in Philly. Would have, you know, he would have mentioned some names a little earlier than he had, but, like, he wouldn't even at the combine, for example. He got asked if what he liked about Daniel Jones. And he was just like, I'm not talking about any players. Like, mm-hmm. It's just such a layup to just go, yeah, I think he's smart and he does this, that, and the other thing good. And yeah. Like, that's it.
It's a non-story.
You don't have to commit to anything. Just, I think he's good at this, this, and this. The theory that I think makes some sense with the Belichick disciples is that they enter their jobs with sort of a hubris that they've accomplished a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When really they don't have the clout at all, like a Bill Belichick does, but they feel like maybe they do, or they should, or they want to sort of coach their new team the way that Belichick has. And Belichick can get away with that because he's Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys can't. So,
and they had a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah, well, that's part of it too. But I mean, there's no question that, like, Belichick does command sort of the the respect of his players. But these guys that get hired from his tree, they go to these new places, and then they don't have that same respect from the players, and it kind of falls apart. Or it feels like that has happened with some of these Belichick disciples in the past. I'm not saying that's happening here, but there is a little bit of a hint of that with the not mentioning players' names, which again is just weird.
Jimmy, before we get to the final team here in the NFC, yes, the Dallas Cowboys, which I know everyone is really waiting for because that's the best one, obviously. I want to let you know, Jimmy, that BGN Radio is brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, the meat snacks that fuel your Philadelphia Eagles. That's right. Righteous Felon Jerky and Snack Sticks are served at the Eagles NovaCare Complex fueling station, where players get their pre and post workout protein fix. If it's good enough for the Eagles, it's got to be good enough for you BGN Radio listeners too. Righteous Felon is based in Westchester, Pennsylvania. It uses locally sourced all-natural black Angus beef and is committed to elevating the meat snacks category with superior quality and creative branding. You can try all the flavors. Jimmy talked about his favorite, the Fal Capone earlier.
Fal Capone, yes.
So there's a lot of different options. Definitely try them all. Why not? There's a bunch of good flavors. You can go to righteousfelon.com and use discount code BGN15, that's BGN15, at checkout to get 15% off your order. There's no limit on how many times you can use the discount code, so use BGN15 and make like your favorite team and load up on the same meat snacks the Philadelphia Eagles do. Jimmy?
Back after this.
BGN 15.